I had a dream the other night. Now, in my dream, our national bird had become the ostrich.
How much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much, and how much longer can she live? As we turn our backs and turn our eyes and pretend we don't see. If ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we.
Good morning and welcome to Eco Talk. And that theme song always seems to be appropriate for our subject matter, no more so than today perhaps. We're going to get a short history of progress from Ronald Wright. He is a novelist and historian who has written a book by the same name. Mr. Wright has degrees in archaeology and anthropology, and we're better than to understand where we've come from and where we're going. Both those degrees, by the way, coming from Cambridge University. The book is just being released in the United States. It was launched first in Canada, Mr. Wright's home country, where it has been on the bestseller list for 5 months now and counting, so he's obviously onto something. The book is being published in 20 countries. Pretty impressive results for a project that started out as a series of lectures, and thanks for being with us in the San Francisco studios.
Good to be here.
So you had this idea about the same time, maybe slightly before Jared Diamond, who wrote Collapse. Seems to be the zeitgeist right now. We're heading in the wrong direction.
I think a lot of people who know the past, are beginning to see the same recurring pattern of folly and profligacy that leads to downfall. Yes, I have to say that my book was actually out before his.
You know what? We can't have enough of these books in my mind, because most of America and maybe the world is pretty complacent and either, you know, by design oblivious or at least just not educated. And that's what we try to do here, connect those dots.
I agree. And actually, the two books complement one another quite well because they don't cover the same ground exactly. And he takes a different approach from what I do. So I think that anyone who's interested in this would benefit from reading both.
And by the way, this is a short book for considering its history of what's gone from Cro-Magnon up through now, about 132 pages. It's a great read, very interesting. If you can't remember your anthropology from college days, this is a real quick summary of the key events. And what are you trying to say? What is the thesis of your what was a lecture series and is now a book?
Well, it's essentially it's like a police profile of a habitual criminal. You know, who comes before the court, and it turns out that he's been doing the same kinds of things his whole life, and so you kind of know what this guy's likely to do next once he gets back on the street. And essentially, so the book follows the same pattern of folly, of overuse of natural resources that begins way back, even before civilization develops. It begins way back in the Stone Age, when Paleolithic hunters got so good at hunting that they actually destroyed hunting as a way of life. You know, when they and I'm trying to make a distinction between useful progress and too much progress, or progress traps, as I call them in the book. And this one that affected the hunters, they started off by, you know, if they learned how to kill two mammoths instead of one, they'd made progress. But when they started learning how to kill 200 by driving whole herds over cliffs, they'd made too much progress, and they walked into the first trap.
And that is one of your points, is that things are progressing so rapidly right now, exponentially fast, that it almost has we have a sense of being out of control.
Yes, I mean, the same pattern, of course, recurs after farming is invented, and you get the first civilizations arising, and almost all of them degraded their environments and collapsed or went through serious crises. What's different now is that we're doing it on a worldwide scale all at once, and we're doing it very much more quickly and with much more powerful technologies than any of these predecessors. So that sort of counts against us. On the positive side, though, we can read the tea leaves. I mean, we, or more, the potsherds, I should say. I mean, we can look at these past societies, see what they did wrong, recognize the same pattern in our own behavior, and we should be smart enough to stop ourselves from repeating it on an enormous scale.
Of course, a couple of classic examples which you talk about are Easter Island, the Roman Empire. What about what happened then is being repeated here, maybe even more so now?
Yes, well, in the past, These civilizations were localized to their particular areas. I mean, the Roman Empire was the biggest of all the ones from the past, but in general, they were in specific locations. You go to those places now, like the plains of southern Iraq, and you see this huge, salty desert, and you see these ancient ruins there, and you think, how did the people live here? There's nothing grows here. Well, of course, the reason nothing grows there is their agricultural practices, in this case irrigation causing salinity in the soil, worked great for them for a while and then led to complete disaster, so that nothing will grow there even now. There again, they walked into the progress trap of a certain kind of farming. I think that we are following that pattern on a worldwide scale, and unlike the past, in the past, you know, one civilization would go down, but another one would be popping up somewhere else, and very often there was continuity, ideas passed from one to the other, and you had the overall experiment of civilization continuing to grow and thrive. But now all the eggs are in one basket. I mean, this is the final test for this experiment as to whether we can support billions of people on this planet indefinitely.
Why do you say that final test?
Because if we screw up this time, we go down globally. The whole experiment fails all around the world because it is so interlinked.
Are you talking about nuclear proliferation?
Well, that would be just one thing. But it could be, for example, climate change. If we upset the climate to the point where it starts to go into wild swings, which it has done in the past for natural reasons, you're going to get crop failures in the world's breadbaskets potentially all around the world. If you get enough of those 2 or 3 years in succession, you're going to see mass starvation, and this is what's happened in the past, and social order doesn't survive that kind of thing.
And oil scarcity, and yet you'd never know that we have a sense of limited resources, at least in this country, with all our, thirsty habits, shall we say, and China and India are right behind us when it comes to oil.
The way we're using energy, and Canadians are just as bad as Americans, so I don't want to get on the moral
high
horse. Now, we use just as much energy per capita as you do. We're just, there's not so many of us. So
you have done something right. Just in the last week, we did a program on how the Canadian government has somehow managed to reach an agreement with automakers so that the automakers will voluntarily, this is both domestic and foreign automakers, will reduce their emissions by 25%. That's, you know, Canada can do that. We couldn't do that here.
Well, I think in California, that actually what Canada is trying to do is to go
right.
Down
we,
to the same
we did that first in
California,
but as a nation, Canada seems to be pretty progressive that way.
Well, in some ways, but there's been enormous resistance in Canada to signing onto the Kyoto Accord. We did sign on.
Yes, which is more than we can say.
But we haven't even started to economize. And, I mean, we can economize enormously. It isn't as if there's environment on one side, prosperity on the other. The Europeans use half the amount of energy we use. They've got smart cars already. We could cut our energy consumption down to European levels and give ourselves an enormous break on future energy supplies. And also, these old technologies that are thirsty and hungry and you're driving huge pieces of metal around, that is dinosaur technology.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the world is leaving all that behind. And so if America doesn't want to be making stuff that no one else wants to buy, you've got to catch up.
We talk about that a lot on this show. Fossil fuels lead to fossil thinking, leads to dinosaurs and what happened to them.
Yes.
Well, this book seems very relevant to that. Why are we not progressing in terms of our brain power, insight, you know, retrospective ability, in terms of, you know, learning from these, not just mistakes, but disasters?
Well, a lot of it has to do with the structure of human societies, that when you get a big, powerful society, you have, it's a social pyramid with the elite and the wealth and the power all going up to the top, and this huge base at the bottom who basically are told what to do, or in the case of a modern consumer democracy, are manipulated through advertising, which is simply a form of propaganda for the current economic system. And the people at the top, of course, are isolated from the problems. You know, the people who are making hundreds of millions every year as their salaries as CEOs of big oil companies don't see there's anything wrong because they're doing just fine.
Right, and they're the ones in power.
And they're the ones in power. They have a vested interest in the status quo, at least in the short term.
The strange thing is that people who are not in a position of power and wealth vote for people like that. That's what we can't figure out in this country.
Well, this is when you get, I mean, the fall of the people on Easter Island is often called by anthropologists an ideological pathology because they got into this cult of building these huge statues, and they actually cut down the last tree to put up the last statue. And when you're doing something that self-defeating, you're not acting rationally. You're in the grip of a mad religious delusion. And I think in our
SUV fever.
Well, in our society, yes. I mean, you can look at the religious delusion as this boundless faith in technology and progress to get us out of the problems that it itself has created, which, of course, is not it gets more and more dangerous as the technologies get more powerful. And also you can look at it in terms of religious ideas, fundamentalist Christian beliefs that we don't have to look after the environment because Jesus is going to come back and sort it out for us.
Mm.
I mean, Ronald Reagan, Secretary of the Interior, actually told Congress that, as I'm sure you know better than I.
I missed that one. Really?
James Watt stood up in front of Congress.
Oh, that's right.
And said, you don't have to worry about the environment. Because
the rapture is coming.
It won't be long before the Lord returns. Well,
that is
a very primitive form of thinking, and it's extremely dangerous.
And that's really what we're here to talk about is why, you know, do we continue to have this primitive form of thinking? We're going to go to a spot break in just a couple mm-hmm. of minutes, but just want to tell everyone who we're speaking to, Ronald Wright, and I sure hope he's wrong, A Short History of Progress, about how we're kind of heading the wrong direction, fiddling while Rome's burning, and he's giving us some pretty concrete, you know, anthropological, cultural examples of those who have gone before us and are not here to tell about it. You're listening to EcoTalk on Air America Radio. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey.
How much can she take? How much can she give? How much is too much and how much longer can she live? As we turn our backs and turn our eyes and pretend we don't see. If ignorance is bliss, then full of bliss are we.
Welcome back to EcoTalk. We're speaking with Robert Wright. He has written a book called A Short History of Progress. And when we went to the break, we were talking about why are we regressing when it comes to our intelligence and our ability to look back and learn from the past. And one of the examples you used is how in the past, quite a ways back, it took about 10,000 years for cultural change to take place, maybe physical changes mm-hmm. too, and how, you know, today we see, I mean, in my lifetime, there has been so much. We went mm-hmm. from, you know, I was born in the mid-50s when there was a sense of abundance, you know, post-war period.
Yes,
of there's mm-hmm. no limit to our resources. And, you know, we had many more resources than population, and it was limitless. And what has happened in 40 short years to really turn that around, although it's not abundantly clear to enough people that that's what we're up against, things are happening so much faster now.
Incredibly fast. In fact,
we don't have time to think.
We don't have time to think. I mean, the problems are actually building up faster than the society can organize itself to deal with them, quite apart from the people who are actually trying to sabotage the attempt to deal with them. But another thing is that human culture, if we liken that to software, has got bigger and bigger and more complicated. But the hardware that we're running that software on hasn't really been upgraded for 50,000 years. I mean, because our generations are 20 to 25 years long, we are actually not evolving physically at a pace that's anything like the pace of our cultures. So I think, you know, we are essentially the same people we were back in the old Stone Age. We are Ice Age hunters, and we're extremely good at solving problems in the short term of saying, there's a mammoth over there, let's go and kill it and eat it. But we're extremely bad at organizing ourselves to deal with things in the long term and saying to ourselves, how can we make sure that there's always going to be a mammoth over there? Because, of course, what they did was drive them over cliffs and no more mammoths, and then they starved.
So what should we start doing if it's not just going to be too late too soon?
Well, I think that the advantage we have is we know what the problems are if we will just listen to the people who understand them. We have tremendously powerful technologies already. We know an awful lot about soil conservation and about various forms of energy efficiency and restoration of ecosystems. We know what we have to do and how to do it. The problem is political will. And the mistakes that's always been made by civilizations in the past is this pyramid effect. I call civilizations pyramid schemes because they're a bit like pyramid sales schemes. All the wealth and power goes to the guys at the top, and the people at the bottom are scrambling. And that scramble actually eats up the resources of the earth. And you can see it happening very clearly in the third world, where people are just cutting down trees just to eat for another day.
Mm.
So what we need to do is to take the surplus. We're generating more wealth than has ever been generated before. We're taking it from... We've gone beyond living off nature's interest, and we're now eating into the capital. But what we can do is take that surplus and put it back into infrastructure, into conservation, into basic needs for the poorest people on Earth, which will cut the birth rate, cut some of that degradation of the environment. So there needs to be a redistribution system so that the short-term wealth that's being generated is put into long-term infrastructure and long-term thinking that will make sure that this industrial civilization can continue, because it won't otherwise.
You made an interesting point about how it's that scrambling at the lowest rung where people are just trying to survive that's causing a lot of ecosystem degradation. And yet, you know, Americans are 4% of the world's population. We use 25% of the resources, create that much waste. So at the other end, we got a similar problem, and I guess you put the two together, and
absolutely,
that's where we lose.
Oh, yeah, I don't mean to blame the poor people at all. I'm just saying that they're put in an impossible situation where they just are having to move into unsuitable land and so on just to carve out fields, and then the soil washes away or blows away. But, yes, I mean,
they're more forgivable than we are.
Yes,
because
we're
creating an impossible situation.
And
we're
wasting our wealth on totally frivolous things. I mean, the enormous...
On the backs of our children.
On the backs of our children and grandchildren, we're building, I mean, missile defense systems that don't work and aren't needed. That $100 billion that's being spent on that, give or take, is probably twice what is needed to give the poorest quarter of the people on Earth basic clean water, safe sewage disposal, a little bit of basic education and healthcare. The UN calculated that 40 or 50 billion US could do that. That's not a lot of money. And at the same time, if you combine that with birth control programs, there again you get this ideological pathology of people who are opposed to sponsoring birth control for religious reasons. That doesn't help at all. You know, we could start to turn this thing around, but the trouble is we're locked into a political and economic system. It's extremely self-interested. And we're anesthetized or propagandized, if you like, by this constant pressure to consume, to make hay while the sun shines. And
to consume, to conform.
To conform.
Not to conserve.
Exactly. And, you know, the unconformity that is allowed is in stuff that doesn't matter, sort of lifestyle choices that aren't really, have nothing to do with the long-term future for our kids and grandchildren.
So are you bullish or bearish on the long-term future?
At the moment, I'm bearish. I think that... not until the present thinking in the most powerful nations, and obviously yours is the top of the list, but also, you know, people in Britain and so forth, and there's plenty of people in Canada who share this very short-term grab-it-all-now mentality. And not until we get those people are out of the seats of power, we're going to see stuff start to take a turn for the better.
Wow. Do you have a website if people want to find out more about your book?
Well, they may have to go to the Canadian publisher's site, which is www.anansi, that's A-A-A-N-A-N-S-I.ca.
You know, we'll put up a link on our blog site.
Carolyn
we'll just
Graf.
Make it easier. So www.ecotalkblog.com, we'll have a link to that website.
Okay, great.
And
mm-hmm.
that was a tongue twister. And the book, again, is A Short History of Progress by Ronald Wright. It's a great read. It's a great recap of history with a particular point of view that's very relevant right now, and it's only about 130 pages. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That our tomorrow's good.